CliffCentral.com. The second hour of the show, you know that we focus on the burning platform where we catch up with some intriguing people who have their eyes and their ears to the ground. Well, their eyes on the news.
And their ears to the ground. Their
ears to the ground and their finger on the pulse.
Look at that. All the body parts.
All the body parts making use of it. And they're doing great things about it. And so this morning we're chatting to none other than a legal journalist and also writer for various publications. I'm so grateful that she made some time for us this morning. Good morning, Karen Morn.
Hello.
Thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. There has been so much that's happening in politics and in terms of South African leaders for the past week.
Yeah, I mean, the state capture inquiry is obviously something that's been long awaited for quite some time. So that's playing itself out. We're back in today for the Gupta's lawyers to apply for them to cross-examine a number of witnesses based on the premise that if they asked to testify, Ajay Gupta wants to do it via video link in Dubai. And then obviously they continue with the cross-examination of Pumla Williams. But the fascinating aspect of all of this is that the former president, who for so long was, you know, basically hinting that he had all these truths that he wanted to spill and would give his side of the story of state capture, has not applied to make an application to cross-examine, leading many people to believe that he may want to try and avoid the prospect of himself being given, you know, giving testimony, even though he can be subpoenaed.
Can we break all of this down to begin with? Because I'm fascinated by this entire process. This is my first time really, I think, in the country we've seen anything like this at this level. So, for example, with the Guptas, is it something that will stand, the fact that they will only be cross-examined if it's through video link?
Look, I think that the Deputy Chief Justice is very conscious of the fact that the allegations against them are so serious that if this is how they are prepared to give evidence, then that might be what they have to do. I think they're between a bit of a rock and a hard place, because Ajay Gupta's issue is that the Hawks have branded him a fugitive from justice, but they don't want to tell him exactly what he's wanted for. We very much, you know, my understanding is it's in connection with the Mkabisi Jonas allegations of corruption and trying to bribe him to become finance minister. But he's basically saying he has quote unquote mistrust for the NPA and the Hawks, and he doesn't want to return to the country not knowing exactly what's going on. And I think in the initial phases of the whole arrests with Estina, there was massive confusion. At one stage, I think the Hawks confused RJ with Atul and said he was a suspect in Estina, when in fact, I think the then police minister said that, when in fact he wasn't. So there is a lot of confusion. But take that out of the mix. Take the Hawks dynamic out of the mix. If they don't give the Guptas the opportunity to put their side of the story in some kind of evidence on paper, whatever it is, and face cross-examination, then, you know, all those people that are saying that, oh, this is just a whitewash, you're not really interested, you just want to, like, lambaste the Guptas and Zuma and make them the scapegoats, inverted commas, those people are going to have a bit of a leg to stand on, because you haven't even heard their side of the story. As dodgy as that side of the story may be, I think I would be quite surprised if Zondo says, no, if you're not prepared to come back to the country, I'm not going to hear your evidence. I'd be quite surprised if he did that, because it means that whole aspect of what their response to these claims is off the table. And then immediately, under the rules of Ulti Alterum Partem, hear all sides, you haven't heard their side of the story, and the findings that you make will inevitably in some form be legally compromised.
I guess this really does speak to what a fair process, something like this, should be. because it's hard for us who are just seeing this from the outside, and of course we carry our own emotions. It's hard for us not to be subjective and say, no, we want him here. We want him to feel the wrath of how angry we are, and we want him to be exposed for who he is and who his family is as well.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. I think one of the difficulties is that I know that the inquiry has said to the Hawks, please tell us what cases are these people wanted for. And they have been meetings, and the Hawks at this point are not prepared to disclose that information. So the inquiry itself doesn't really know. I mean, the Hawks are saying RJ is a fugitive, but they don't want to say what case it is. And there are all these allegations with regards to the Hawks' handling of these various state capture cases. So it's a bit of a mess. And I do understand why people would think, well, you know, stuff them, unless they're prepared to come back into the country and themselves sit in that darkened face cross-examination, then we're not prepared to listen to them. But I think that I would suspect that Zondo will be a bit more pragmatic. Mm. And say, well, we'll allow this evidence in. We'll put it to the witnesses. And then in the interest of fairness, because if he doesn't, you know, we could have a situation where they finalize this report and it's immediately challenged in court. And you go and say, well, we tried to give our side of the story. And they don't want to hear us. So with this report can't stand. And then it's locked in, you know, legal tussles. And I think the main thing is to just try as much as you can in these very difficult circumstances to at least attempt to get their response in some form or another to these allegations.
Do we understand or know on what grounds the Hawks doesn't want to disclose information, or why they're doing that?
Well, I have spoken to them, and they've just said, look, on record, they've said we're cooperating fully with the inquiry. I know they had a meeting with them last week, Monday, but off record, they've sort of said, listen, these guys want us to disclose our dockets to them. We have multiple cases involving the Guptas. We know the Hawks have confirmed that they're investigating a criminal case against both the former president and Ajay Gupta in relation to Themba Maseko's allegations. So it's not just the Jonas matter, it's other cases. And they're saying, we don't want to go and, if we go and disclose, then the Guptas are going to know what we're doing, and we don't want that to happen. Mm. I think one of the other difficulties, to be honest with you, is that it came out in the evidence of Jonas himself that he wasn't 100% sure which Gupta brother had actually made this alleged bribe/threat to him. It could have been Ajay, it could have been Rajesh. So that certainly puts the whole criminal case in jeopardy, because if you can't establish the identity of the person that he was talking to, you certainly can't prosecute at this point. And we know that Dudazane Zuma, the former president's son, is facing charges in relation to the Jonas matter. So I think the Hawks are between in a rock and a hard place, because I don't think they want to necessarily disclose that they wanted RJ for that case, given that there are now these legal difficulties around the identity of who exactly Jonas spoke to on his version.
How much do you think we're going to find out when former Minister Lynn Brown now gets to speak out, because she's the one who's applied to cross-examine Jonas and said that one of the Gupta brothers told him to the family to look after her?
Yeah, I mean, she obviously wants to dispute that. I mean, it's basically hearsay evidence, because Jonas is saying that this Gupta brother, whether it was Ajay or Rajesh, said this to her. She has been at the center of a lot of allegations that, you know, she was a pivotal player in state capture, and she's always denied that. She, remember in the ESCOM inquiry, she very much came out strongly to bat and said that this was unfair and what have you. I suspect she will actually even be required, potentially summoned or potentially volunteer to give evidence in this inquiry to deal, you know, with these kind of allegations, because she's repeatedly said that she's, you know, she wasn't used as a mechanism, or she wasn't a knowing player in the state capture narrative. But unfortunately, you know, as with Malusi Gigaba as well, certain things happened under both of their watches in their positions that I think they're going to have to explain and try, and because ultimately the buck stops with them. whether they, you know, whether there were things going wrong behind their backs or whatever, they need to explain their side of the story and put that on record. And I think she will, I think she's very, very much likely to actually come and give evidence herself.
You interestingly use the term, the buck stops with them, and that leads to accountability. And I think I speak for a lot of people when we say we're hoping in this process we do get a sense of people owning up to what they've done. Definitely for us, we'd like to hear the honest accounts of what have happened, of what has happened. Are we? Do you think we will get a sense of accountability and conclusion to a lot of the stories that we've heard over the past little while?
You know,
she says with a sigh of relief. Oh no.
No, it's just, you know, the problem is that I think what happened was that people who did speak out, and this was the piece that I wrote in Business Day yesterday, was people who did speak out basically got vilified. Like someone like Themba Maseko, who was a DG, just got, you know, basically in many respects forced out of government. You know, it came at huge cost to them. And I think for those individuals, there were a whole sea of other officials around them that witnessed this and realized that not going along with what the Guptas, you know, with what the, you know, Guptas allegedly wanted, or this alleged state capture project, could really be problematic for their continued careers. People have families, people have, you know, they need their jobs. And I think a lot of people who would see themselves as being good, inverted commas, people, went along with things that were very problematic. And I think that phenomena didn't just happen with state capture. I think it happens in the corporate sphere. I think that we as a country treat people who come forward and identify issues within organizations, be they corporate or government, they get treated horrifically. And I mean, any human being will look at this. I think a lot of people in that situation may have looked at what happened and thought, you know, I've got a family, I need to look off, I need to keep my job. And those people now, I think, you know, are keeping silent because they were complicit in what happened. Maybe not in a deliberate or you know, wanting to be part of that, but they are now afraid to come forward because they also then face the attack of, but why did you do nothing? You know, why were you complicit in this? And what's so fascinating is that we've seen Zondo come out and say, you know, he was actually quite disappointed, was the word he used, with the lack of people who've come forward. Mm. He said, you know, and he even said this to Maseko with those DGEs who signed that memorandum. He said, you think these people are going to come forward? And you know, they have chosen not to at this point. And I think part of the problem there is also that if you are someone who went along with it and now puts up your hand and says, well, I want to explain what happened, you know, our environment is such that you know you are going to be torn apart within public discourse, because South Africans, I would argue, are extremely unforgiving. And it, you know, it's a massive risk to say, come out and say, yes, I was part of this, but I'm sorry. We don't have that kind of culture. And that is what's going to stymie this commission in some respects, because if we want to get to the heart of what happened, we need people who were in the machinery of this thing, who were wittingly or unwittingly part of it, to come forward and say, this is what I did, this is what I know. You know, and I think that's a real difficulty. And I think we as a society need to evaluate how easy we make it for people to come out and tell the truth.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we do make it very easy for them.
But I do have to commend you and say that your article in the Business Day yesterday was so pertinent, because you titled it "The Shocking Testimony, Evidence of the Pain Whistleblowers Endure." And I'm not trying to condone what these people have done. I'm not trying to defend them, but you know, if I was also in their position and I'm saying, well, another one is dropping and another one is being, you know, this is what is happening to that one, I would also have that trepidation of, oof, I don't know if I want to go on with this.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, all of us work and have worked in workplaces or experienced things where you know, we might be, you know, whether it's in a labor environment or in a company environment, things may happen and we feel profoundly uncomfortable with things or decisions in our environment. And, you know, as a human being, to be confronted with that decision of, do I rock the boat and potentially jeopardize my career prospects, everything become, you know, potentially targeted, or do I just remain quiet because I fear the repercussions? You know, all of us at one stage or another, if we haven't had it already, we'll have an experience like that. And I think we really, you know, it's easy to cast judgment when you're not the one in that situation. And I think it also leads us to really respect and show admiration for the people who have had the bravery of coming forward,
yeah,
despite all of this. And I just think, you know, my point is this: we all like, oh, these guys must go to jail, people must be prosecuted. But we're not a society that rewards integrity. We don't go and say, wow, this person came out and spoke the truth. Like, you know, let's like really do everything we can to support and protect and reward this person for acting in an honest way. We don't do that. Themba Maseko, you know, he said to me, like, when he lost his job, he said, the political elite decides you're untouchable, and then the corporate world will not want to touch you either. And I mean, that's a real problem, is that people who do speak up end up, you know, being on the outskirts, ostracized, struggling to get jobs. It's not healthy for our society for us to really be so unsupportive of people who have that, make that brave decision to speak out. We have to fundamentally change how we treat people like that, how we protect them, how we support them. Otherwise, things like Steinhoff, things like SARS, things like state capture, all these things are just going to keep happening because we're not enabling people to tell the truth and be protected.
Oof. It's such a fine line. I totally get what you mean. And at the same time, we also need to have a level of objectivity when we're dealing with things like these to make sure that at the end of it, it's constructive and we move on in a better manner.
Completely. And I mean, I think, you know, I think it's important that the state capture witnesses are cross-examined and that, you know, there's discrepancy, if there's discrepancies in what they're saying or the issues that are not correct and whatever, they are cleared up. But I also think that we just need to be careful in terms of our public rhetoric about being nuanced and considerate in our criticism versus attacking and tearing down and branding people as liars or saying that someone would go out and just simply make up evidence about these meetings and whatever, you know, because yeah, that's what they feel like doing. I think that we have to be very, very acutely conscious of the people who have spoken up, have done it at great cost to themselves.
Yeah.
And that needs to be understood and reflected when we evaluate the evidence.
Just in wrapping up, because I know you're a very busy person, we don't want to keep you on for too long, though. Do we know, excuse me, do we have any updates on Fakey Mentor? Because I remember as we're talking about, you know, what it means for people to stand up and speak out, last week she said she was fearing for her safety at a point. Has anything else developed from that?
Look, I mean, I know that they did. My understanding was that they said they were going to move her into another hotel, and that happened, and they've sort of looked at her security and her situation. So inquiry took it very seriously, and they have assisted her. I mean, she is going to be back potentially if she faces cross-examination from some of the witnesses. So we should get a greater sense of update as to what happened there when she returns to potentially be cross-examined.
And are we also going to see another appearance of Phumla Williams or Mzwanele Mang?
Well, Phumla is coming back to complete her evidence today after these applications for cross-examination. Mzwanele Mani has been notified that he is an implicated party from her evidence. He obviously, there was that unfortunate incident where he basically texted Phumla Williams and said that they wanted her to say certain things about him, the New Age breakfasts happening after his time and whatever.
Yeah.
The inquiry is still investigating that. He's admitted that he did it. I mean, it's rampantly inappropriate to contact a witness while they're giving evidence in a commission. But anyway, they're finalizing a report, and the DCJ Zonda will then make a decision. Money, up until the last, I mean, he may have done it subsequently. Last hearing, he hadn't actually brought an application to cross-examine. He may now do that. And I think there's a very strong likelihood that even if he doesn't choose to cross-examine, he is likely to be summoned as a witness before the inquiry to kind of address some of the allegations raised by Maseko and Pumla Williams.
And then finally, what was the justification behind the inclusion of Daniel Kaufman and Joel Hellman? These are supposedly the two academics who were the ones to coin the term state capture.
I think basically, I mean, they are coming to, you know, give evidence later this month, but I think it was the commission is, you know, we are the first country in the world to actually ever do a commission of inquiry or try to understand state capture as a phenomena. State capture, the term that they cause, is a phenomena in countries like Russia, certain countries in South America, but it's never been the subject of like an actual state-sponsored commission of inquiry. And I think, you know, the issue is what exactly they were asked to address. What exactly is it? Like, how does it operate? How does it work? When we say state capture, what do we actually mean? So in terms of that, they were brought in and they were asked to sort of address certain hallmarks of how the machinery of state capture worked in terms of how do you, you know, with state-owned enterprises or government, how are the mechanics of this achieved? So that was why they were brought in. I mean, they have not studied South Africa specifically. They're talking in broad senses and really looking, you know, they did a lot of work in Russia and some of the South American countries.
Okay.
I mean, I think it was just kind of more trying to, I think, encapsulate in an academic way what exactly state capture is. So I think that was why they were brought in. And I think that the inquiry is going to bring similar experts in to give evidence throughout the hearings.
Well, thank you so much, Karen, for coming on this morning. Thank you for your perspective and also just breaking down some of these things that just go way over our heads. But to now understand the inquiry a bit better and the processes that are going on there.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for stopping by. We'll chat to you sometime soon.
Cool, man. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.